It's 3:01, and we have a quorum, and I'd like to bring the ESAC Waste Diversions, Collections, and Education Subcommittee to order. Today is Wednesday, April 3rd, 2024. Item one, roll call. Fred?
Here.
Ariza, Doug?
Here.
Jennings, I guess I should say everybody's last name for the recording. And Trevor Ledbetter.
Here.
Yep. And Mark is sitting in. All right. Let's go on to item two, the ex officio report. So Margot, I was texting back and forth to Brittany about whether or not we wanted to do like a full report for the full year.
You're gonna love this.
Or if you wanted to just give a general one today.
Okay, I can just do a really general one today.
Okay.
As some of you know, Plan Tucson is a general plan that's built every 10 years, and it goes before a vote of the people in order to be adopted, and it does guide the city policies for the next 10 years. I think it was 2013 was the last one, so we're a little behind the time, but that's sort of normal. There's one particular under the Water Climate Action and Green Space section. There is develop, maintain, and promote a pollution-free community, by which they mean waste. So I've already complained the fact that waste or waste management isn't even mentioned in the title. So how would you know that that's what it's talking about? So we're at the stage right now. There have been a couple of meetings, two meetings, with people who are interested in this in a particular area, working on suggested policies and actions, which would form the basis of this plan. And so last time, I think I talked a little bit about plan, what some of the things were and how disappointing it was that the things they had in were either already underway or being done. Oh, I should step back a minute. This is building on the plan that was adopted in 2013. So the Plan Tucson 2013, the Climate Action and Adaption Plan, One Water 2100, and our Zero Waste Plan are actually the basis, and things are being taken out of those and put forward into these particular statements. So it's not like you're starting from ground zero. There are adopted plans which are forming the basis for going forward. And so I won't go over all of them. I will say that 3 weeks ago, 4 weeks ago, we had the first meeting, and I made a lot of suggestions on how to change this particular goal. And unfortunately, when we had the second meeting, none of the things we suggested had been put into place. So I stood up and made a big fuss about why in the world did we even come to these meetings? Because in fact, whatever we said, nothing seemed to get changed. And their attitude was, well, we wanted another group of people to come and have a chance to make their statements. So Chris went to that group for the second session, and I gave her my notes and things, and I've got about one note that she added. So there wasn't much new added. They deal with things like brownfields, Superfund sites, environmental justice, hazardous waste. Let's see, they talk about noise and light pollution. We're not especially interested in that. They are talking about transitioning public agency fleets to zero emission and near zero emission vehicles. So that, of course, would impact our trucks. And to move away and work on ways to reduce utility fuel and procurement costs and implement a community-wide zero waste management plan. So in general, and increase neighborhood and community cleanups. So those are sort of the general statements they're making. I think it's been a little bit disappointing. The next meeting is April 23rd from 1 to 4 at Tucson community, the TCC, and it's going to be cross-cutting. So they're recognizing that when you move away from one kind of fuel, you're also impacting transportation. So there'll be a chance for other housing and all kinds of other aspects of this plan to come together with this one particular water, climate action, and green space. So that's in a very brief summary.
And if any of you want to
please do.
Just come on that Saturday.
I don't think it's a Saturday.
Oh, I thought it was.
No, it's a Tuesday.
Oh, it's a Tuesday, the 23rd? Okay, I thought we were doing a Saturday meeting sometime.
Well, they do have some general community forums, which they've had people talk. I don't remember the dates of any of them. And some of that information has gone into what we have here now. So,
okay. Well, it's on the site. So yeah. Plan Tucson.
It's on Plan Tucson website. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so it's important to speak up for waste management because, as we know, it's a really important issue, and that it's complicated. It's not a simple, straightforward. But it has to get into the plan. I mean, this is what, when their new policies come forward out of the city, they reference these plan statements. So if we don't get in, we'll be left out. Oh, and Brittany's putting in the www.plantucson.org, so you can go on their site and see what they're talking about.
Right. You know, we're getting a lot of sustainable Tucson folks. And Margo and I have tried to meet with them before. We have different information, I think. More practical information, you know, we call it the nuts and bolts. So
I don't know if it was shared with you, but they drafted their own zero waste map and sent it to the mayor and council and everybody.
Well, one of the problems is the zero waste plan that they have listed in this materials is only the roadmap. So it's almost impossible to take any policies out of the roadmap. So for that, and when I talked to, I think, I forget who I talked to, Carlos, you, someone, that about how it's too bad this never got written up, the roadmap never got written up into a plan with steps, you know, where you could pull policies out that are going to get you to that point.
But I think a lot of it is included in that Tucson Resilient Together action plan. That
also, I was worried about that wasn't going to transfer to the Plan Tucson.
That's not there.
Yeah,
what they access. That apparently there's a 300-page report of all the background information that went into zero waste and into the zero waste roadmap. So I think Brittany made sure that that was sent to Plan Tucson so they had better background information, because some of their statements were just, you know, things we've been doing for a long time, we should start doing. No, we're already doing those things.
Right.
So it's a bit frustrating. The other thing, folks, is come along. We're usually, citizens are outnumbered by the staff by 2 to 1. So it could use a few more.
No, you sat at a table where they were all staff.
Except right? for me.
Except for you. That's ridiculous. Yep. How is this going to end up, you know,
being a citizen plan?
Yep. Being a citizen plan. So it's
okay. That's it for me.
That's it.
I'm anxious to hear from Trevor.
Do you have any questions or anything have you heard about this, Trevor?
Plan Tucson?
Yeah.
We have. We've had bigger problems to deal with.
Oh, come now.
I know.
Yeah.
We are aware of it. Someone on my team went to one of the early sessions in the process. Things seem to be stabilizing a little bit, at least for my department. So I am hoping that we can get somebody out to the next session on the 23rd, whether it's me or somebody else on my team, because it does sound like there needs to be a little more voices in this world than just what we're sending from ESAC. And yeah, so I'm gonna see
Right.
what we can.
Good.
Definitely. Thanks. Good. So, and anyone else is welcome to join. You don't have to begin. You can come at the end. So, anytime you want to show up is okay. All right. Let's move on to item three, with the U of A sustainability update and the spring move out. You know what's going on?
I do,
Oh,
yes.
great.
So we have had a few meetings, and things are moving quite quickly as the end of the semester is only a month away. So as with previous years, we are bringing in suburban minors to help with the majority of the move out needs when it comes to things that are left behind and donated. The Office of Sustainability, my team is working with the University of Arizona Campus Pantry to divert still usable food from the dorms as students move out to the campus pantry for use over the summer. We are covering about half, maybe a little bit more than half of the dorms on campus. We're sort of staying away from those dorms that have a high percentage of students who use the campus pantry because they're just not going to have much to give back. And then we're also taking on we were already working in the Honors Village, which is our largest dorm on the north side of campus. So we'll be continuing that. But then last year we had University of Arizona Surplus servicing sort of all the other needs from the Honors Village. University of Arizona Surplus, as I mentioned last year, didn't have a great experience, so they're backing off this year, and Suburban Miners will be taking on the Honors Village for furniture and anything else that comes out of that dorm. And then Suburban Miners will also be collecting food in those dorms that we're not going to be focusing in on, but there'll still be some food that can be diverted. We'll be doing a very similar process to what we did last year. We're trying to do some additional flyers, thinking about how we can prevent some of our rolling bins and other things from getting stolen like they were last year, and putting in some new processes to hopefully, make this year go a little bit more smoothly. Beyond that, my team also has had a few conversations with some of the off-campus housing around the university and also a little bit further afield. So I think we met with through our government community relations department, I think we met with five off-campus housing folks to sort of give an idea as to what has worked for us in the past, what hasn't worked as well, things to keep in mind. They all have a much less logistically complicated move out process as compared to the university. So I think that they will be able to work with some of those smaller groups, like relatively speaking, like Goodwill or Big Brothers Big Sisters, to divert some things. And they will also be working with Campus Pantry because they have sort of a different move out schedule from the university. So they will also be trying to get some food to the Campus Pantry, and are also getting connected up with smaller groups in Tucson, like Sister Jose's. Is that right? Yeah. And some other groups like that. So it seems like, at least at this point, we have our ducks in a row to sort of make sure move out goes smoothly for us this year. And we're sort of expanding the folks that are involved with diversion a little bit further this year as well. So we'll hopefully have a little bit more to share in terms of how their move out processes go for those off-campus student housing complexes Probably more late May and then into late June and July, since they're on more of a lease basis than the university is, but sort of all going well there so far.
Great. Have you contacted any volunteers to help you sort of stand by the bins and help people sort correctly?
We have not. So we work closely with housing, and that is not something that they're interested in trying out this year.
Okay.
We've already proposed a few things that they do want to have deeper conversations about for next year, and so that is one of the things that we'll sort of start to incorporate. We're also in the process of resetting one of our larger on-campus student organizations, Students for Sustainability, and thinking about how we give the students that are involved in that organization a different sort of an experience that provides more of a launching pad to other on-campus and off-campus environmental jobs, organizations, internships, those sorts of things, research. And so also thinking about how we can more meaningfully incorporate them as a pool of volunteers. It can get really difficult towards the end of the year, again, just using students. But that might be the easiest place for us to start. Nonetheless, how we incorporate off-campus volunteers and how we mitigate what housing sees as security issues, because anyone who's going into a dorm has to have a background check done, how we deal with that, and how we bring things out of the dorms also. It's just a lot of logistics, but it is something that we're thinking about.
Yeah, I was
So
thinking of the
you
volunteers
do
just
have
helping.
big blue bins, right? Like behind
Correct.
dorms and stuff. I don't know, maybe that group could do something like, put signs up on the blue bin for what you can put in and just to remind the students.
Yeah, and we're thinking that signage was part of the problem we ran into last year, especially at those larger dorms like Honors Village, where you have, quite honestly, a plethora of rolling bins of all sorts of different colors. It can be very confusing, and when you're just trying to move a student out, when you're trying to move your kid out, you're going to grab whatever you need to make that process easier. So we are trying some different signage this year. Signage is another thing that we're also looking at a lot more critically for next year, and also standardizing bins as best as we can, so that way it is a little bit easier for folks who are moving out to understand if it's a red bin, it's for donations. If it's a gray bin or something, it's for food. If it's a blue bin, it's for this. Just sort of thinking in that direction of trying to make it the system as user friendly as possible, because at the end of the day, that is gonna what it that's kind of what it boils down to.
Great. Got to keep it out of the landfill.
Yep. Last year, I think I shared we got to a 28% diversion rate. I'll have to double check that, but I think we can get there if not surpass it this year.
I hope so. I hope you have a
Yeah.
goal of 50%.
Fingers
Doesn't mean you
crossed.
have to hit it and just, push the aspirations.
Yeah.
Right. Well,
I mean, even
thanks. 50% sounds sad.
A lot of
Better
work.
than zero.
Yeah,
It's
it's a
better than
lot.
zero, no question.
Yeah.
Well, it sounds like you got things well in hand. I'm sorry you haven't. Can't use the volunteers yet, but maybe they can have a rule that all they can do is go in the lobby. I mean, they really don't allow people into the lobbies even who are not background checked.
Nope.
Well, how do parents get in?
Parents become the responsibility of the resident, to my understanding. Bringing in those outside organizations or volunteers that aren't connected to somebody who lives there is where it becomes difficult and problematic. So any employee who's going into the dorms or has access to the dorms has to have a background check done, even if they're a student employee. And that just becomes both pricey, but also just time consuming.
Yeah, for sure. Wow, that's amazing.
Okay, thank you, Trevor. Let's move on to item 4, code enforcement update. And Lori, you're gonna give us updates on the numbers and then the interactive KPI report.
Yes, hello, can everyone hear me, please?
Yes.
Yeah, great. I put my video on, doesn't appear to be showing up, but starting with the 2024 numbers, I'll remind everyone our 2023 numbers for total amount of cases were 5,797. So for 2024, and these are cases that are opened or generated in that year. So far this year, we have 1,223 that were generated. Of those, 554 have been closed. Others could be either not yet inspected, in progress, in court, and maybe even referred. And that's about 13.5 a day. And then I'd say it's keeping in with last year. We haven't hit monsoon yet, which is going to really increase our numbers. We'll get a lot more cases that way. So it's, I think it's pretty much reflecting last year, the same rate that we're getting calls.
Are you getting those weed reports?
they're going to start increasing here very soon because of the wet winter. I remember, maybe 10 years ago, same kind of thing where we got a lot of February rain, and it got a little nuts because we, usually it's just the monsoon season, but we'll see how it goes.
Yeah.
Definitely. Now the second item is an interactive KPI report. So this is something we're going to have online. Portions of it may or may not be available to the public, but I hope so. And I'm going to share my screen. Looks like it might be disabled, so I don't think I can share it, but.
Oh, yeah.
Try again, Lori.
Okay. Oh, good. All right. Let's see. Window.
What does KPI stand for?
Well, it's a new word to me, but it's showing, basically, you can. Well, let me show you the page first. That might make more sense. It's using something called Power BI that is a Microsoft product. But just showing how effective the employees are, how the department is, and it'll break it down by year, by month, by day, by inspector, by types of code violations. And this is pretty much the version it was back in January. And the IT is still working on it, and it's going to be improved. But like here, you have weekly workload. You can select the inspector, the year, the month, whatever you want to know. How many did they close during that time frame? How many cases total do they have? How many are active? So it's great information. It's all at the touch of a fingertip, and it's going to help us keep tabs on what everybody's doing in a very easy and interactive manner. So when we get a more final version, I'll put that up as a topic again.
So you're not sure we're gonna. This is going to be for the public.
I believe it's going to be. I know we're going to share it to the ward offices. Okay. And I would imagine this could also be available, at least portions of it, for the public. I don't see why not. And that would be my hope.
Good.
Who makes that decision?
It's probably something I'll have to review with the city attorney's office, actually. what is public, but it should all be publicly available information. You know, I don't know about the part about per inspector, but I think at least like enforcement activity, that sort of thing. Or we can even make another page that might be specifically for the public that basically shows the totals where maybe you wouldn't do it by inspector. So something like that. It's going to help us a lot.
Good. Good. Lori, what about some of the old cases from 2023 that haven't been closed?
Yeah, I'm going to see if I can run a report. Yeah, we have several that, and especially now with like vacant properties, they tend to drag out. And when they go to court, especially, they do drag out. Our cases are getting scheduled out about 3 months.
3 months.
At a minimum. You know, so we might issue a citation. You know, we do everything we have to do, and then the judge will schedule out 3 months. So, and then it could get continued a couple other times after that. So it is not a quick process.
Well, I asked for another magistrate in the ESAC annual report. So we'll see if mayor and council even read that.
That'd be great. You know, I think the one assigned to us has got a lot to do.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you guys work hard. Can you tell me if you got any more inspectors?
I know we're going to do a recruitment pretty soon, but I don't have an exact date on when that's going to start.
So you're still at what, 13?
No, we're less than that. We have a retirement. So actually, I think we're at 9 with 2 CSOs, so a total of 11.
Oh, geez. Okay. Sorry. Been asking for more since 2013, so. Okay. Any questions for Lori? Okay, we'll move on. Thank you, Lori.
You're welcome.
Let's go on to item 5 for waste diversion, and we're going to go over the MRF report. And that's you, Christina, right? We got you.
I am ready. Let me see my screen. Brittany, you type. So it's for February. We see a drop in all of the tonnages pretty much. And I'm sure that had to do with, you know, after the holiday kind of thing. But
short month.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, so the ACR is doing well, so that's really helping us offset our costs. It was really interesting because it's kind of a side note, but we had a meeting with Steve Kozacik about the Bifusion program and the Hefty Renew, and you know, we were kind of said how a lot of people are bringing the things that go in their blue barrel that should go in the blue barrel. And he said, well, you know, he just hates for Republic to get more, you know, more money, more finance. Yeah. And we said, well, you know, but under the new amendment, the city gets like 75% of the revenue. So he wasn't aware of that. So then I think he came out later and said, well, you know, either way, you could do it. But we did have a meeting with Bifusion. They do not want the ones and twos and fives.
Good.
So, Hefty Renew will be on the shelves next month. So hopefully people will use the bags. The bags are cool. They say very clearly on them what you should put in them, including styrofoam. So maybe we'll see a difference in our plastics on this report as more people hopefully become more informed about what you can put in. And I will tell you, Margot, we're working on a lot of the messaging. So we were out looking at one of the orange bins. We're really going to be very clear about what is accepted in that, but at the same time, update all the blue dumpsters that are out there. Because when I went to see them, the ones that were at that site were very beat up. You couldn't hardly read the signs anymore. So we're, you know, I've asked our container maintenance people, we're finalizing designs for the decals, but I want to make sure that all the NRC sites have updated, very clear signage, and that it's readable so people will hopefully pay attention to it.
You know, so I've been getting questions about glass because the new blue barrels are including pictures of glass on, you know, the decals they put on them.
Those are actually older ones.
Oh, okay. All right.
Still had, yes. But again, I mean, you know, we did go back and forth about whether or not we should put glass back in the blue barrels. It's pretty much a wash in terms of whether we put it in or take it out. It's, you know, the same cost for us. And given, and we did have meetings with Mayor and Council, and what Carlos said is, you know, we would recommend just kind of keeping it as is because our contract with Republic is up in a couple of years. And, you know, we're looking at what are we going to do after, whether it's any kind of renegotiation or a new MRF or whatever it is, but, you know, making whatever, you know, including glass in part of our decision-making process for those next contracts or agreements, because, you know, one of the criticisms of recycling has always been, well, you make changes all the time and we don't know. And so, knowing that we're going to have some new agreements coming up, it makes sense to just kind of leave it as is. If people are putting it in their blue barrel, it is still getting recycled. And of course, if people take it to the glass drop-offs, it's getting recycled.
Okay. And is it getting picked up? Are we getting the deal that was made?
It is. Okay. The first load that they gave us in return had a lot of contamination, but Carlos attributes that to, you know, we really didn't specify the quality that we would expect in return, so that's something that does need to be addressed.
Okay.
So first of all, I noticed that there was a new audit, which is why the percentages are different between January and February. And it's sort of interesting what some of the changes are. And one of the changes is increased glass. So it suggests to me that, in fact, people are beginning to just put the glass back into the blue barrels instead of bringing them to the special containers.
Right.
So we see it go up, you know, almost a percentage point, a little over a percentage point.
Right.
But what I was curious about was how the cost is. So 39.84 is a cost to us, and 43.96 was what it was before. So can you explain how it's a cost instead of a, if they're coming down to get it, why aren't we getting anything for it?
Well, this is what's going through the MRF. This is not what we're sending. So you know, so this is always going to be a cost to us.
So at the MRF, they are not paying the, what is the group called? I forget. Strategic Materials. They're not paying the MRF anything for the material, for the glass?
According to Republic, no. they don't receive anything.
So, but this suggests that in fact, Republic is paying strategic materials to take it away.
And, you know, I will have to look into that and get a specific answer for you. But we've always been told that there's, you know, that, and what this would be is the cost for transportation.
Right. I understand that. But that means we're paying strategic materials to to carry it away. And this had been part of the debate all along, was to try to cut down on not paying strategic materials to take it away, to be able to use it locally.
Right. And what we collect in the purple bins does get picked up by SMI, and they are paying us $5 a ton for that.
Yeah.
So the bottom line is that if we put it into the purple containers, we get paid $5 a ton for that. If we send it to the MRF, we pay $39 a ton.
Right.
Okay. Well, I think that's an important
But differentiation. The other part of it is the costs for maintaining 22 glass drop-off sites is very expensive.
And the hauling.
It's a lot of lost revenue, because we're collecting 20 routes that we could normally have, you know, picking up a paying business. We are paying over $4,000 a month to Beacon for cleanup of those sites. So that's why Carlos is saying it's kind of a wash.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, I'd like to see those actual numbers, because that's a bit distressing. If it's 4,000 a month to Beacon to clean, and that's only, that's these neighbor, the special, the glass sites, I'm going to call them, because it's, for instance, Ward 6 is not a neighborhood recycling center. It's a special collection center. So to see what the costs are, 4,000 a month to Beacon, and then what the cost is for hauling.
Yeah,
it's a lot. You know, I know we're probably not making up. If they're paying us, what you said, $10, $5 a ton, but this is $39 or $40, depending on the month. So it would be interesting to see if that really is the same. You know, how close it is coming to that. So certainly would like to see what's happening to that. The other question that came to me this morning in another meeting where I was, is about the red plastic Solo cups.
Those can go in your blue barrel.
Those can go in the blue barrel. That's mm-hmm. what I thought, but we were having that discussion and the people didn't believe it. So, And it doesn't say anything, and they all pulled out their recycled coach. You should be very proud to know that everyone had recycled coach on their phones. And it doesn't say that specifically, that, you know, if you ask it a special question, it doesn't say mm-hmm. okay in the blue barrel.
Well, make sure those university students know that, Trevor.
I like that you asked that question, Margot, because it is a question that we get a lot. And I don't know where the misunderstanding comes from, but red Solo cups is like the number one thing that people are confused about. I don't know what happened when, but people ask about that one a lot.
Okay.
Good.
Well, there's general confusion. So maybe one of our little, Christine, one of the new signage or ads or whatever you're putting together, information should deal specifically with this red Solo
cup. For sure.
To let people know that they can go in the blue barrel.
People still ask about yogurt containers and butter tubs.
Just have to keep repeating the message. And they have to remind me what stores are going to be sold.
They're going to be in Fry's and Walmart.
Fry's and Walmart.
Walmart.
Because the fact that they will take styrofoam means that There are lots of people who are going to buy them and use them just for the styrofoam.
I'm very excited about that.
Yeah.
Now,
And
one of the things we saw in the bales that are being stored at the landfill and at Friedman, there's a lot of commercial and industrial waste that should not be in there. So we really need to focus on, and we are saying on the bins, we only want residential waste.
Right.
Okay. Well, Steve was getting a commercial company.
Yes, and that
Yeah.
took.
Is that okay? That
No,
company?
they don't want that. But
He,
yeah.
unfortunately, and I mean, I don't know that he was ever maybe told directly from Bifusion, but he had the impression that they would take all plastic. And so there was one company that was bringing car parts. And according to Bifusion, no, they do not want those. There was a company, and he mentioned them, Polyprint.
Yeah.
They print on PVC sheets, which I saw the material. It looks like paper, but it's PVC. And they dropped off 4,300 tons. 4,300 pounds in one drop off. When you put that with all these other plastics, I mean, Margo, and you know this, we see this with our contamination. Like we tell people, when you do your boxes, no, you don't have to take off the tape because there's a small amount, that's going to get cleaned out when they process it. You don't have to cut out the little plastic envelope. Our window on your envelopes or, little pieces of plastic on cardboard, because it's all going to get sorted. But when you throw it, but would you throw in,40 pounds of plastic wrap? That's a problem.
Wow.
So, and that's kind of what happened with this Polyprint. They dropped off 4,300 pounds of PVC. That if he sought out, honestly, I'm surprised. I wish somebody would have said to him, donate it to a school or
Well,
someplace.
that's what gets me. I mean, sheets of PVC sound fascinating for all kinds of things, not to mention people at the university who are using 3D printers and individuals. I mean, it should have gone on Freecycle for
Yeah,
people
I mean,
who have
it was
printers.
very clean,
Yeah.
just like looked like a ream of paper,
Wow.
but
Incredible.
a lot
I guess
too
most
much
of
of
us
it.
don't even know that exists, except I guess
No,
since me.
when we saw it, we were just like, what is this? And Paul Benvenuti, who's with Reynolds Corporation, happened to be here. They had their national business meeting here in Tucson, and he said, I'm almost positive it's PVC. He did a little test. It sure enough was. He said, no, had they sent it to a special recycler, it probably could have been recycled. But when you put it in with all this other stuff and it gets mixed in, it just ruins the whole load. So we definitely have to do a good job of letting people know what we're looking for. And I think, when we tell people it's really for those things that are coming out of your home, it's still a lot of plastic. I've been paying attention to what we throw away at home, besides the plastic bags from stores. Well, I don't use that many, but my husband does. But the chip bags and, things like that. I mean, still a lot of plastic, even though I don't buy disposable forks and spoons or no,
Well,
I try not to buy that stuff,
yeah.
but you still get it.
It's the bags that's amazing. Or just this morning we're doing a waste audit in a kitchen, which for a child care center, and they had the bags for the cheese, the bags for the vegetables, you know, all these things that you buy that come in these big bags. And we had no concept that they were using that much film plastic, you know, and that we needed then to start what's going to be done with that. And they were quite amazed too at the number of what they were tossing of those. And I do think, I mean, I noticed in my own home trash, taking out that film plastic really substantially changes how much trash I have to dispose of.
Yeah.
It lessens it substantially.
I personally try to use my reusable bags when I go to the grocery store, but I said, like I said, my husband doesn't. And, you know, and he'll go usually at least once or twice a week. But he does take them back to the grocery store. But even just the, you know, Ziploc bags and, like you said, wrap on cheese and the vegetables. And I try to not even put any of my vegetables in a bag unless I have to, you know. But, yeah.
Well, can you send something to the ward offices to
get all this info out? Yeah. We have met with all of them, and so, you know, yes, they'll be expecting, you know, they know that we're going to ask them to spread the word.
And those hefty Renew bags, when they're full, what do you do with them?
You'll need to take them to the orange drop-offs.
Yeah.
Now.
Okay.
And this is, you know, who knows if this will happen. They're still working on Republic to try and get them to take them in the blue bins and pull them off at the MRF. That would be ideal.
Okay. All right. Lots
and
of
how
things
much is
going
a bag
on.
Gonna cost?
A box of bags is about $8. There's 20 of them, so it comes out to about 30 cents a piece. And they project that that should last people a year.
All right.
In the chat, I put just a picture of the box and what the bag looks like, and also the bill insert for April. Just kind of a little snippet of how that program works.
Cool.
Oh, good. Good.
Oh, there it is.
I can show you the bag. I've got one right here.
Oh, so that's really a good size.
Yeah, I mean, it's the regular big, 13.
Regular big
13. Trash. And then, it, you know, it's imprinted with exactly what you should be putting in.
Great.
It's kind of cool because it breaks it up by plastic packaging, foam products, plastic bags and wrap, plastic dinnerware, and then it has the nose printed on there as well.
Cool.
Good.
Oh, there she is.
Well, it certainly stands out.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, let's move on to item 6, public outreach update. And that's you again, Christina.
Yes. Well, I mean, so the big thing is, of course, is this Saturday is the Zero Waste Collection event at the church. So we're busy prepping for that. The Earth Day at the Children's Museum is on the 20th. We'll be there for that. And then the day after that, we're going to be at the zoo for a party for the planet. That's happening.
Oh, at the zoo, the party for the planet?
Yes.
What date is that?
It's going to be Sunday the 21st.
Okay.
So we'll be there. And then we've got, you know, our regular HHW on the 13th, on the second Saturday. So we're pretty much busy every weekend in April.
Okay.
And then I have on here the food cycle update.
Yeah. Right. We got a good drop off totals.
Yes, and I can share the screen for this one. Where's my share? There it is.
While you're doing that, when are new classes starting up? I have people that are interested in getting involved.
We have, well, we're tentatively scheduled for one on April 24th. We have to decide where that's going to be. We were waiting to make sure we have someone to lead the training. And then we're trying to get, we have one on April 16th with TMC staff. But I think that's more of a private one. They requested it for their employees. And then we have to schedule the May one, but we want it, the zoo has offered to let us do it in their education room.
Oh, okay.
And so we're looking at May 18th, I think. But as you can see, it's going up every week. The busiest drop-off site is Highland Vista Park, their garden. And the second one is actually Little Leaf, which is a really small community garden just off of Speedway. And the collection, the bins are locked bins that are available 24/7, and they are very heavily, and it's in the alley, so not even the easiest one to locate, but that's the second busiest location. We are looking at expanding. We did add Tucson Clean and Beautiful. And we're so that's two in Ward 5. We're looking to add one in each, another one in each ward, and we're moving toward having all of them as locked bins so that they're available 24/7.
Okay. Well, that's encouraging.
That's great. Yeah, and I've been talking about it, and there's a lot of interest in by people, for instance, who don't really have the capacity to do their own composting, either because of the space or because of the work that takes to get it to really to work well, to really compost well. And so they're really excited by the opportunity to take their organic materials and have a place for it.
This weekend, not this past weekend, but weekend before, we had drop off at we dropped off compost at Ward 6 and at Highland Vista that people could come and just take it. So that was, we would want to make it available to the people who are participating in the program.
Super.
Okay.
Great.
My dog's barking. She's not listening to me. Let's go on to item seven, collections for the route adjustments. And I'll mute.
Hey, good afternoon, Trevor, Margo, and Chris. Long time no see.
Yes, hi.
How you guys doing? I'd like to share something, share the screen. Let's see what this is.
You should be good to go, Luna.
Thank you. Can you guys see the screen?
Yeah.
That's excellent. So basically, let me try to take you guys back, okay, about a year ago, on April 10th, 2023. What we did is we added one recycle route. I mean, that's just like one of the adjustments that we actually made on, and that was Monday's Recycle B Week. And how you can see is, it used to be 40, now into 41. And back then we had 194 routes, or actually, yeah, 194.75. So it actually increased one route. And that was way back in April. And then the following, we waited probably about maybe 3, 4 months. We made another adjustment. And the second adjustment was on September 12th, 2023. And that was to our Tuesday routes. We actually added four refuse routes onto Tuesday. And that brought it up to 199.75 routes. Then moving forward, 3 months after that, it was January 22nd. That was the latest one we actually did. And we actually added four refuse routes and one recycle route. And that brought it up to a little higher now, 204.25 routes. And we were looking at probably in about a couple weeks, we're looking at adding three more routes to our Thursday routes, which will bring it up to 207.25.
So the refuse routes are brush and bulk? Oh, that's just trash. You're using the name refuse.
Yes, yeah, so that is correct.
Trash instead of, okay. Just making sure I understand.
No problem. No problem. And then we're looking at, in July, that'll probably be our last adjustment. And that'll happen in July 26th. We're looking at adding three additional refuse routes to our Fridays, and that'll bring it up to 210. So in all, I mean, basically this is probably about maybe 15 routes where we added. We did a lot of adjustments in regards to making the routes a little bit easier to complete. I mean, the standard is probably about 800. So we kind of went from 1,200 or 1,500 stops. We brought it back down to about maybe 900 to 1,100 stops, which has made it very easy for us to complete the routes. One of the things, one of the benefits that we've actually seen here is that whenever our department or our area residential is short personnel, or let's say we're short of personnel, or equipment, we actually still complete the job. We leave no route behind, and that's a plus, and that's attributed to adding the additional routes. And also it's been beneficial, you know, as to reducing the overall overtime of employees and trying to find that Goldilocks time frame, you know, from 3:30 to about maybe 4:30 p.m., you know, where all the employees all come in together.
Okay.
So the food compost, I notice, is the 0.25 route, is just on Thursdays? And
yeah, well,
it's one truck that does it in a quarter of a day, or?
Yeah, that is correct. That is correct. Basically, this is the commercial food compost route.
Okay.
This is it's totally different from what we used to do with Christina. Christina's actually doing like the neighborhood type of
food cycle, yeah,
exactly. And this is the commercial, and yeah. So basically, I mean, hopefully, once we get the or attain two Perkins vehicles, hopefully, they'll be here probably in about a couple months. We want to maybe combine both together. That's our goal there, and then that way we can eliminate this route.
So then, is this same person or truck or go and pick up all the containers that are out for food cycle? Where does that fit in?
Yeah. Basically, yeah. We do have a dedicated person. He actually goes out there on a side loader, and it's a regular 27-yard side loader because that's all we have for this. And he'll go out there and he does his runs out there and provides service and dumps it out at the landfill. So that's the whole idea about utilizing these new Perkins vehicles. It's an 8-yard body in back of their GMC 450s, and able to maintain the weight and so forth. So that way we can utilize these these 27 yard vehicles, you know, on routes instead of utilizing them on in food compost route.
Oh, okay.
Okay. How often do they pick up the food cycle?
It's once a week, every Thursday. Once a week. Yes, okay. That's that commercial.
Any questions for Luis?
So nope. The brush and bulky is totally separate from this.
Yes. Yes.
And I know that the this obviously means you need more drivers. So how's that fitting into the driver issue?
Basically right now, I think just in residential, we're up to 57 now. We're still lacking we're having some issues still with the drivers, but I mean, little by little, I think we just attained, I think, 8 new operators. I think they're starting within these next 3 weeks. Okay. So that should be very helpful.
And does this meet are they unionized or whatever, the drivers who had complained about the fact that there had been an effort to equalize in terms of amount of time, so figuring in how far they had to go to get back to the landfill and so forth, and what they wanted was a consistent number of houses. Is this satisfying that desire?
Yes, it sure is. Okay. It sure is. Yeah, we did when we were actually rerouting, we did utilize some of the union members and other employees, and they collaborated together and to create these routes.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Nice. Okay. If there's no other questions, and thank you, Luis, we'll go on to item 8, landfill. And I think Frank's out there somewhere.
I am here.
Oh, good.
Okay, so I'm talking today about Greenways diversion. I just want to give you an update. I've talked to you in the past where we've indicated we started a Greenways diversion here at the landfill from the working phase material that comes in. Mostly it's from the cell haulers. And as they come in, we have staff that is inspecting the loads and then separating the materials into different piles. We have two piles. We have one for clean green waste, which is your typical tree branches, any brush that comes in that's not contaminated and does not include palm fronds or does not include cacti, for example. Then we have a second pile that will include the palm fronds, the cacti, and any other material that we don't necessarily want in the clean green waste. So the clean green waste is what we chip into and grind into material that we can use in our compost facility. The other pile, which has the cacti and the palm fronds, that also gets chipped and mulched. However, we would use that for on the slopes for stability of the slopes from stormwater runoff. We just completed a grinding event, I want to say last weekend, and we ground up. So that'd be the first quarter of 2024, 414 tons of clean green waste and about 450 tons of the slope mulch material. That happened over 2 days, Thursday and Friday. Previously, when we were doing it as a pilot, we ground up 420 tons and 970 tons in the second quarter. That was 420 in the first quarter of 23, and in the second quarter, 970 tons. And then we had a little lapse. We weren't doing any diversion until we actually kicked off the program in late December.
Must be a mighty powerful grinder and chipper to take that much in 2 days. 800 tons. 900 tons.
Yeah, about 800 and what, 64?
Yeah. That's amazing.
So the clean green waste is chipped down to half an inch, and the other material doesn't have to be ground up to, we only do it to a 2 inch, so on a 2 inch screen.
Do you use a bulldozer to feed it into the chipper or?
No, not a bulldozer, they're using a backhoe.
A backhoe.
With a loader, with a loader bucket, basically.
And then it just makes a pile at the other end? Do you have to then have somebody moving the pile away or?
Yes, then we have to move the pile.
Sometime you can make us a little video of what.
I'm sure. Okay. That's a
envision
good
envision how that's working.
I can certainly do that for the next time.
Yeah.
So I anticipate we'll be doing that quarterly, at least 3 times a year. It just depends. We had to move fast on this one because we were running out of material for the composting.
Neighborhoods are talking about the compost that's been dropped off, like at Ward 6, and are you dropping it off at all the wards, or?
I don't believe that it's going to all the ward offices yet. That one that was dropped off was for a special event.
Okay.
Most of it is being dropped off at the community gardens.
So is it in a bag or do you need to bring buckets or what?
It's not in bags. It's just a pile. So people need to bring in their own container.
Is that it, Frank? You got more?
I mean, it's been popular. The compost has been popular. So I'm anticipating we won't keep it around too long here at the landfill. So as soon as we make it, it'll probably be deployed out, which is a good thing.
Great.
That's all I have. Any questions?
Okay. Thank you. Oh, and Louise, we still have your screen up. There we go. Okay, now we're back. Okay, let's go to item 9 now for the fleet maintenance update. And we've got 3 items under that. Who's going to be giving us that report?
I can start. Okay. This is Maggie. Hi.
Okay.
Let's see. Good afternoon. Can I share my screen, Brittany? Can you help me to, can you enable that for me?
You're all set, Maggie.
Thank you. Let's see. Okay. I think you can see. Is that true?
Okay.
Yes. Yes.
Okay. I'm getting a little notification. All right. So my understanding was you wanted to see sort of a year over year view of the costs for maintenance and tires and parts. So I put together this schedule here with the fiscal year 22 actuals for gas and diesel, which came to 9.6 million. In fiscal year 23, we had 11.2 million. And the best I can tell is a forecast right now that will be about 10.5 million. I do think for gas and CNG, that's a little low right now. Because I pulled the numbers at the end of February, we're generally at least a month behind in the our billings from the suppliers for the gas and the it's hard to know where we're at just to extrapolate it out through year end. So again, I do think these are a little low. And then we did have a change starting fiscal year for this fiscal year in July. Instead of the direct charges, so we have a work order system that the Fleet Services Department uses to track repairs and maintenance and parts that are put on vehicles. And in the past, those were charged as direct charges. So one vehicle would come in, it would need this specific repair, it would take this amount of time and the tires and the parts or whatever parts were applied. And that would be the specific charge. And if that was an environmental service vehicle, then the charge would go to the Environmental Services Fund as a direct charge. Effective July 1st, those charges were changed to an indirect cost. So what that means is that we take prior year actuals and calculate what the cost to the general fund, namely Fleet Services, was from the Environmental Services Fund, turn that into an indirect cost, and that amount is charged. It's basically like a flat rate based on a calculation. So you can see this is the amount that is budgeted this year for those items of cost from Fleet to the Environmental Services Fund. It's just a different way of charging these between government funds. There are pros and cons for both models. I wasn't here when the decision was made, but my understanding is they just wanted to reduce. There was a lot of charges every month going back and forth between the general fund and the other enterprise funds like water and the ES fund as well. And they wanted to minimize that administrative burden. So these costs, the $8.4 million is the indirect cost. It won't be any more than that. If that's the amount it's going to be. And then it will be recalculated again for fiscal year 26. So we'll have a new amount. And those will be based on fiscal year 23 actuals. These were actually based on fiscal year 22 actuals, which was the full fiscal year that was available when the calculations were made. Just like right now, we're making the calculations for next year, and we're going to use the fiscal year 23 actuals. So the indirect charge is likely to go up. One thing I will say is that because this is tracked in AssetWorks, it still is tracked in that work order system. We are able to see on a monthly basis what the actual costs are. They're not getting charged. The direct costs are not getting charged, as I said, but we can look at those, and I compile those every month and then send those out to the superintendents for collections in the landfill so that they can see what the costs are that are accruing to their vehicles in real time. Any questions about this?
Yeah, let me ask that. So I thought probably was a way to reduce some of the paperwork shuffling back and forth. So let me see, make sure I understand. So you used fiscal year 22 to forecast 24, and the numbers are somewhat different. So obviously you did something to change them.
These are these were the actual costs in fiscal year 22, actual in fiscal year 23, and this is my forecast for fiscal year 24.
But making it an indirect, you're putting into the budget some sort of calculation on top of what actually happened in 22. So are you using a cost of living, that's not the right one, but the price index increase? Or how did you decide that 7.8 would go to 8.4?
Well, they take the actual costs. That's a great question. So they take the actual costs and then they use a driver to calculate what the cost will be. And I don't know if a cost of living adjustment was included or why it would go up in that manner. I honestly don't know because I wasn't involved in the calculations. Clearly it wouldn't make sense 2 years later to charge exactly 7.8. So sure. What they do is they turn the costs into a percentage from the asset work system, and then they take the actuals and allocate them out. But so I guess I could get more details, but I don't know exactly how they arrived at this number.
So what are you doing for this upcoming budget year, which you must be involved in those calculations? Mm-hmm. You're going to use the 8.8. And so aren't the budgets already getting put together? So what are you doing to the 8.8 from 2023 projecting into the 25 year?
Well, those aren't the only costs that get rolled into the indirect cost allocation.
No, I know that, but just for
because it also includes personnel. And so it's basically they take the fleet costs for the whole city, for the entire city, and then they take every department's piece of that. So let's just say, for argument's sake, all of fleet costs the city $50 million, including okay. people, including office supplies, including all the little bits and pieces. They roll that all up and they say 2% went to the ward offices, 5% went to this, based on looking at the they take the information from AssetWorks and they say this percentage went to this department, this percentage went to this department. The only departments that actually get a charge are the departments that have HERF, water, environmental services that are non-general funded. They don't pay for the other departments' costs by any means, but so let's just say environmental services ends up being 10% of the $50 million, then $5 million is the amount. That's not going to be the same amount as what were maintenance, tires, and parts in AssetWorks, because it basically is the cost of providing fleet services to each department in the city. So it's a much bigger pool of costs than just this piece. So it would include the administrative costs of fleet, all of the bits and pieces. Yeah. Which these direct costs don't reflect. These direct costs don't reflect the cost to like run a fleet department, because there are other costs in there as well. So this rolls those up into it. So that's why it goes up.
Yeah, right. And we've been giving raises to the employees, so that which is appropriate. Is there ever going to be a kind of evaluation as to whether this is actually representing appropriately, I guess is a good word, what the actual cost is? So I guess what I'm thinking here is, so it's interesting to me that you still are tracking all of those work orders. So you still have that, all that information that's coming together on a monthly basis, as I understand what you were saying. So the only thing that's different really is, number one, it's smoothed out over the year. And the second piece is that the financial folks are not having to transfer money monthly, differing amounts from the general fund, from environmental services to the general fund to pay for fleet services.
Yeah, I mean, I think, as I said before, I think there are arguments, pros and cons. I don't think this is an inflated number. if anything, it might be a little low because mm-hmm. we know that the last 18 months has been a very inflationary environment, a time of really, really rising costs. So I think there are pros and cons both ways. I do think, you know, if the calculation was done and there was some kind of crazy number came out and said, this is what goes to the ES fund, then yes, we would have to look at it and say, that does not look reasonable. I do think this is in the ballpark, mm-hmm. but it could be a few hundred thousand dollars one way or the other, but I don't know. So there are pros to the city for reducing the administrative burden, and then there are cons. The difficulty that, you know, one difficulty might be it's difficult for the department to understand the impact of its operations is having on the direct costs. So if, like Luis was talking to us about adding new routes, so that increases wear and tear, that increases fleet, though that's not going to be reflected in here at all. So in that case, the ES fund might be coming out on top. Again, if Luis has one route that incurs more damage than another, he's not getting that information mm-hmm. as he still is from me, but the point, it's not getting charged to the department. So it kind of removes the actuals. It makes operational decision-making perhaps more difficult. So there are pros and cons, I agree. And again, I wasn't here for what the decision was, but I can understand the merits of using this indirect method as well.
Yeah, it's interesting because in the past we had worried about, for instance, the cost of tires and how fast some tires were wearing compared to an earlier brands they had.
Yeah.
And you're right, and that information will not come back, will not be translated in an economic way as it would be if they were getting the direct charges. It kind of reminds me of people who choose to pay their electric bill in equal amounts over a whole year, even though we know there are tremendous variations in your monthly use, depending on how much daylight it is and so mm-hmm. forth, a lot of other issues. So it's an interesting approach.
Yeah, where those people might enjoy savings, if they did enjoy savings in that year, then they wouldn't receive that because they had opted for the smoothing. So, but then again, if there were really big increased costs, then they would be happy that they signed up for that plan because
I'm sure they'll catch up with them. Nobody gets anything for, there's no free lunch. The other one I was interested in is the gas and diesel. And I know it comes from having been involved in this committee for a long time, that there was a time when we had very rapidly changing fuel costs. And so it was essentially impossible to budget in any way. And so the budget, the actual cost of the fuel was just really causing havoc to the budget. This looks pretty even with 1306, 1.3 and 23, 1.3 and in 24. But we've seen some volatility. And at that time, we put in a fuel surcharge that if it went over $3.50 a gallon, that there could be a fuel surcharge, which was put on the residential. And it was put on for a number of months. And then when the fuel went back, cost went back, it was removed. So, you know, we used it in good faith. We didn't just inflate the cost of things. But it looks like the volatility hasn't been great enough to require any of that kind of adjustments. Would you agree with that?
I would. I know there are folks on this meeting who, and this was part of the discussion we had in preparation for meeting with you today. So I'm hoping that one of my colleagues in General Services could talk about the cost of fuel and the fuel surcharge. Is somebody on the meeting that can talk about that? Tammy or Ray?
Maggie, can you hear me?
Yes.
Great. I'll step in and tell you that the fuel surcharge is actually developed by the budget department. We haven't been involved in it. I think they get an estimate that they put together a budget price, which I know they just created one for $3.50 a gallon. And they kind of use that as a budget price. And they make a decision on how much they'll keep in a fuel contingency, but that's just for fuel pricing. What you're talking about is the fuel surcharge that's provided to the customer, and that's outside of fleet services.
Okay. So maybe this is something we need to get back to the subcommittee on. Is that right?
The question is it needed? I mean, what, I don't know what you're paying for gas and diesel these days. I know the city has a different price than what we pay at the pump.
Since this is an ES specific question, and I think maybe nobody's on the call, Ms. Garcia, to answer this specifically, let me, and of course it's probably in the code and all, and why we haven't instituted the surcharge recently, all of those, that's outside my purview, but I think, could we save that and bring it back to you? Yeah.
It's just was, you know, again, in times of great volatility of prices, it helps people stay in budget. Otherwise, what happens, of course, is that when your fuel costs are going way outside of your budget, you have to sacrifice other things that you were hoping to do in order to stay within the budgeted amount.
Sure.
So okay. That's what we were concerned, and especially for ES, because what's at the end of the budgetary year goes into our landfill fund, which supports the landfills after a closure. And so it's important that we not just eat everything up, that there's
right.
money yeah. that goes into that. So, you know, it's a complex issue because on the one hand, it's volatility and fuel prices. On the other hand, it's that long-term financial goal.
Sure, building the fund balance.
Yeah.
Okay, well, we need to move on. And so Maggie will get back to us on that. We've got the truck delivery schedule for 2024 is who's going to be speaking to us about that.
I will. I'm Tammy.
Oh, okay. Hi, Tammy.
And I'm with, hi there. Thank you for letting me join you.
Okay.
I have a quick update on vehicles that were ordered. There's the new electric side loader. It's in production. We're looking at potentially in service in July.
Okay.
Luis Luna can give you an update, but one of the manufacturers is taking it up to a show to kind of demonstrate it, and it'll have the city of Tucson decals on it. There are 8 side loaders. 4 are getting ready to be mounted, the body and the chassis, over the next month and a half. So we kind of anticipate July, August, September timeframe for those. If everything goes correctly, there's no issues with the pre-delivery inspection, et cetera.
Did we ever get the body for the electric trash truck?
So they're telling me that they're going to have that body and the chassis married. So basically put together, hopefully by end of May.
Wow, that's been a long
time. It has been a long time.
Yeah. Okay.
That's the side loader.
Yes.
All right. How long do they sit on the lots after they're put together?
We saw one of those questions, and I have Daryl Kress, who's our shop superintendent. Daryl, do you want to address that question?
Yes, of course. Hi, everybody.
Hi.
So as for the, when the vehicle arrives here at Fleet Services, is that what the question is about, right? I believe.
Yep.
Right. Yeah. So we have a process that when it comes in, at on average, it takes about 5 to 6 weeks to get one completely upfitted on our end and then in service. And that includes the window tinting, rekeying the trucks, decaling the trucks, installing any tire pressure monitors. Then we have to retrieve all the serial numbers off of all the chassis parts. That has to be completed and then put in the system. We check all the fluid levels and do a QC or a PDI on it, pre-delivery inspection before we release the vehicles. And those are all, you know, we have to deal with the vendor schedule for the window tint. We have to deal with the vendor schedule for the rekeying of it. So that's the reason it takes, once we receive it here, roughly 5 to 6 weeks. There are other examples that we have to deal with sometimes on possible recalls. As soon as we get them, we've had recalls. We've had to wait for a vendor to come down and repair before we can cut them loose, because we won't cut them loose unless they're safe and ready to be operational. We've had, over the past couple of years, we've had issues with motor vehicle and them wanting to do things virtually and not coming, you know, not making license plates. We've got all kinds of kind of weird setbacks on some of them, but they're very few and far between when we do get a setback. Level 2 inspections we have to deal with sometimes. Departments that want to change their upfit, so they want to add something to it. Then we have to, once we get our part done, we have to deliver it down to our communications department, and then they get the radios put in there. And once they get done, and all, you know, staffing levels, you know, can push it out, you know, another week, 2 weeks sometimes, even longer. But for the most part, we try and make sure we get them out. You know, a rule of thumb is between 5 and 6 weeks.
Okay.
So the warranty is running during that time, isn't it? During
yes.
6 weeks. So that's 5 or 6 weeks of warranty that we've lost, essentially. With the truck's not on the road being used, it's just sitting there, you know, like driving a new car off of a lot, you lose what? 20% of value before you even drive it.
Yeah, the warranty doesn't start with our vendors. We have it written in our contracts. It won't start until we put the vehicle in service.
Okay. So it doesn't impact that.
Right.
So it just, I guess, takes it a while to phase all those things in. It does seem like an awful lot of time to do what seemed like surface things, but I guess that's because I'm ignorant about how difficult it is to do those things.
Yeah, it's just the different areas and the different vendors that we have to bring in sometimes. You know, not one person works on that one vehicle on that one, you know, does all that on that one vehicle. It may have to go to multiple different people. For, you know, one does some of the wiring on it for the tire pressure monitors. Fleet control does all the decals. Like I said, COM installs all the radios, all the numbers, and the rekeying is done by a different vendor. So, because we rekey all the refuge trucks the same key, so they don't have to have, you know, because you get a driver loses one key. When they're different keys, you don't start the truck. So they make them all one key, so there's always a key available. And those take time.
Yeah. So you can't ask that keying be done when they're made?
We can on light-duty vehicles, but on the different chassis and chassis models, because they're built to our specs, we can't. No. They won't do it. Like Peterbilt won't make all the keys the same. So we have to do that when they get here on the lot.
Okay. I'm just going to move us on a little bit because we're going over time. And Let's go to the fiscal year 25 equipment needs.
Okay, I think I'll jump
on you, Luis. Okay.
Yes. So yeah, so basically after fiscal year 25, we're still looking on board of doing or purchasing 8 side loaders. Front loaders, 3. We're actually looking at 1 rear loader, but we're actually trying to look at maybe making some changes because we do have a real good fleet now of rear loaders, and we have scheduled to purchase 2 rear loaders. So we're looking at using those expenses and purchasing actually 1 more roll off for the commercial section.
So are we still paying as we go? We're able to, the capital fund pays for all of the trucks that we're ordering?
That is correct, yes.
Okay. Because that was a big push maybe 15 years ago, was to get out of COPS and paying the extra interest instead to pay as we go. And are we able to use them only during the length of the trucks, the length of time of the warranty, and then sell them and get another one so that the costs for maintenance are covered more?
You know what, because of what occurred, you know, during the COVID years and because of the shortages of the semiconductor, you know, there was a lot of instances where we weren't able to purchase the vehicles, you know, and so that had a really big effect, not just for our organization, but all the other cities within the entire United States. But yeah, as I think as of this year, I think what we're getting is we're getting the crane carriers, the battle motors, and it's a chassis that we actually chose because Peterbilts were not available. But coming next year, we will proceed with the usual that we usually get is the Peterbilts.
So we'll be able to be back into that plan where essentially I think the warranties are what, like 5 years?
Yes,
that every 5 years we'll be replacing the trucks, selling the ones that we're replacing to recover some of that cost, but keeping the maintenance cost down.
Exactly.
And it's the cost, not just the maintenance, obviously, that is that has to be done, but where the money comes from to do that, if it's under warranty, then you can recoup some of that from the builder, manufacturer. So that's still a plan.
Okay. And let's move on lastly to the fleet. Is that the fleet maintenance trends? We have one more. Did we cover that, you think?
I think we covered them.
Yeah, okay. All right. Okay, well, let's go to item 10 for future agenda items for the next meeting. And thank you to everybody from EGSD showing up and putting this list together and giving us the information that we've needed. So we appreciate that.
University, I want to hear from Trevor how much he diverted.
You can run, but you can't hide. Okay. Anyone else?
Special.
Okay. Oh, right. Let's move on. Item 11, called audience. We don't have anyone. And so let's see, what clock time are we at? Oh, 4:40. Thanks for sticking around, everybody. It's time to adjourn.
There's Chris. Thank you, Chris.
Yep. Lots of good information.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Have a good night.
Thank you, everyone. Bye.
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 Have a good rest of your day.